Hey readers, I'm Anne Bogle, and this is What Should I Read Next, episode 98. Welcome to the show that's dedicated to answering the question that plagues every reader. What should I read next? We don't get bossy on this show. What we will do here is give you the information you need to choose your next read. Every week, we'll talk all things books and reading and do a little literary matchmaking with one guest. Readers, my book, Reading People, How Seeing the World Through the Lens of Personality Changes Everything, just hit bookstore shelves last week. Thanks so much for your support. The book is off to a strong start, and it's all because of you. If you want to buy it and haven't yet, would you please pick up your copy now? Those early sales are really important because they signal to retailers how many copies to order, how much shelf space to allot, and how much to feature the book on their site or in their store. But readers, there are tons of ways to support Reading People or any book by your favorite authors without spending a dime. You could add it to your want-to-read shelf on Goodreads, or recommend it to a friend, or ask your library to purchase a copy and then check it out. Or leave a review on a site like Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or post about it on social media. Buy Reading People wherever new books are sold. It's available as a paperback, an ebook, and an audiobook, and I narrate that version myself. Whatever you choose to do, thank you for spreading the book love. This week, I'm chatting with Ricky and Michaela, two Seattle area friends and serious book lovers who knew each other for years before they discovered they shared a love of reading. Now, barely a year later, they say it's the best part of their friendship. In today's episode, we discuss what it means to live a literary lifestyle, why they believe in reading with the seasons, and how scary it can be to recommend your favorite book to your best friend. We also explore how they create meaningful, interactive experiences to bring favorite books to life, like their literary dinner parties. I'm pretty sure I say this every week, but this is a fun one. Let's get to it. Ricky and Michaela, welcome to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
Hi.
Well, this is just one of a few times where we've had multiple guests on the show. The last time was a married couple, but I feel like you all might not be that different because you've known each other forever, right?
Yeah, about 6 years.
Yeah.
What author has the quote about some people we can know our whole lives and we feel like we never know them, but some people we've only known a few years and we feel like they've been in our lives forever?
Yes, completely applicable.
Yes. Don't know who said it, but that's a good one.
Well, I'm glad that you all are here together because we are talking about the difference you all have made in each other's reading lives, and we're getting you all your next buddy read, right?
Yes.
We're so excited.
Me too. How do you all know each other?
So I was in college, it was my senior year, and I had to do a thesis. And my thesis topic happened to coincide with one of Ricky's life experiences. And so I got to interview her. And I kind of knew her through a mutual friend, but that was the first time we had sat down one-on-one. And after the interview was over, we kind of just kept talking in a coffee shop for a long time. Yeah. And so that sort of just spurred a friendship.
Were you all both in Seattle at the time?
Yes, we lived actually at the time like 4 minutes from each other.
Mm-hmm. Up until recently, we have been within almost walking distance of one another until we just moved.
Oh, was that a factor? I mean, was that on the cons list that it would be more than 4 minutes?
Yes.
when we started the Ardent Biblio, before it was even the Ardent Biblio, when we started just realizing that there was a shared passion for books, which honestly, we did not realize the first 5 years of our friendship.
No idea.
It ended up becoming the best part because both of our husbands were gone. One evening a week at the same time, my husband was in school, her husband was working late. And then we're like, hey, we're alone every evening this day of the week. Want to be alone together? and so that's how, you know, that convenience of living close together was
Okay, so you're both passionate readers, and I would assume have been your whole lives. Is that the case?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you didn't know this about each other for the first 5 years.
That's correct. And that is what is so weird. We realized that reading is so secluded that, like, even being friends for this long, we had no idea.
And in all fairness, when we first met, I had a younger toddler, and then shortly after my daughter grew a little more, she had a baby, so it was definitely a time in our lives where reading would have taken a bit of a backseat. So I guess if you want to be a little bit fair to us in that sense, that would have been a reason why we wouldn't have known so early on that we were both readers.
So when did the big reveal happen?
Last fall, we were getting together every Wednesday. Mm-hmm.
And it was just for dinner.
Yeah, too. It was just for dinner. We both have kids. Kids like to play together. So I had been thinking about how on the internet there are so many review blogs, and those are great. Like, if you want to go check out a book and see if it's for you, those are really helpful. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't seeing a lot of how books impacted people's lives and how they were interacting with them, and like more of a literary lifestyle take. Mm-hmm. And I decided it didn't exist, I was going to make it. And obviously, being the internet, you photographs translate your ideas a lot better. And I knew she was a photographer. And so I kind of approached her and was like, look, I'm starting this thing. I don't really know what I want to do with it, but like, this is my basic outline. Do you want to collaborate?
And then I basically lost my mind as soon as she showed me her beginning Instagram. That, so I didn't even know there was a, like a bookstagram world existed. And then once she showed me her idea and her blog, I was like, oh my gosh, like if there's room for me in this, I want in. This is amazing. And that's really how it started. We just hit the ground running and we've been going ever since.
So I know what you mean about how there are lots of book review blogs, but there's so much bookish enthusiasm in other ways. Can you unpack what you think of when you think literary lifestyle?
Oh, definitely. We think about literary community. We think about independent bookstores. We think about libraries. We think about seasonal reading. We think about all the ways that books are actually interacting with your life much more than just reading it. Like taking our kids to the library and raising mm-hmm. readers and wanting to instill that love and supporting all the interesting local literary events. We go to book clubs.
Yeah.
There's just so many ways that books touch your life that you don't necessarily think about consciously, but is so important.
And for me, it kind of started with my daughter was learning to read just before she went into kindergarten. And I was realizing that if I wanted her to be a reader, if I wanted her to love books like I was hoping she would, that they needed to see that regularly in me, like within my real lifestyle, including that with reading, if that makes sense. And so then with Michaela's idea coming out, it was just, the timing was just side by side. It was so perfect. And then, you know, it was like, oh, well, I should take my kids to the local library. This is a resource to utilize more. And then it was, Michael's like, oh yeah, I'm going to library too. And so it just between that, we realized there's this whole world that we need to bring out better. And we want to share that with each other. And then we wanted to share that with other people. Like, did you know your local library is an amazing place to take your kids if you don't have anything else to do, or if you want something better to do, or if you didn't want to spend a fortune on other activities? Like, it's just, it's a thing you can do with your children, with your friends, and it's fun. Like, you don't have to be by yourself at all.
When we talk about, you know, reading seasonally and why we want to do that, and like yeah. what impact books are having emotionally in our lives or role they're playing, all that kind of stuff mm-hmm. kind of just plays in. And we do a lot of fun stuff too. We even borrowed your book flight idea, and we're mm-hmm. playing on that a little bit. And there's just a lot of unexplored topics that people just don't talk about enough.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I love it. Okay. Tell me about these literary dinner parties you all throw.
So it started with deciding to buddy read together, because I feel like I've read nothing. And Michaela's like, oh, I've read everything in school. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just feeling really insignificant and insecure about what I've read or never read. And so she's like, well, here, try this one. And it's like, okay, I'll read that. And then I'd come back and like, hey, that's really great. And then, oh, by the way, there's a movie. Want to hang out when we have dinner that night and watch it? And so that's how it originally started. And then,
yeah, I has already been kind of throwing themed parties. I did premiere parties for TV shows that I liked. And I threw my nieces a Harry Potter party while they were here just for fun. Yeah. And I one day just clicked. Like, I can do this for books too. Absolutely.
And she would send me pictures and I was like, wow, that never would have crossed my mind. Like, I don't know how you can pull it together. I was like, but we should do this. Like, this looks like fun. And it's been one of the greatest little adventures we've taken together so far in making our reading lives even more tangible than they were.
And now we have a memory with it, because we remember sitting together and talking about the book, like in our little scene, and like having dinner. And it just really cements it in your brain as something memorable versus just a book right. that you read and forget. And books are just really easy to pull details from. So many mm-hmm. of them are rooted in time and place and have details about surroundings and food, and just pulling those things out, it made us really pay attention mm-hmm. to the book.
Tell me about your favorite literary dinner party you've thrown so far.
I don't know.
That's a tough
They're
one.
Constantly evolving. I feel like every single one we do is better than the last.
Yeah, but I'd say when we started, some of our first we did last fall and winter. And so, really quick, so Michaela taught me about what seasonal reading was. Like, I've never read books based on the season before. And I was like, is this a thing? And she's like, yeah, you should try it. And so we did. And so some of the first ones we did were Little Women and Wuthering Heights,
Jane Eyre,
Jane
all the
Eyre.
moody books.
Yeah, and so it fit with the season. And I would, and with Little Women, that, for me, that was what took it because I had actually never read it before. But I grew up with it with my mom, you know, so I'd already had this slight attachment to it because my mom loves Little Women. And then we read the book, and I loved the book. And then we made this dinner, and it ended up being just, it was such a fun thing to do together and get to talk about, you know, the March sisters and what we thought of the book and how we could pull elements from the dinners that they literally had on their rustic table in their cute little house. And we pulled elements from that, made, you know, what was compared to now, it was a much more simple dinner, but it was just as warm and inviting and fun to do together. And so to me, I think kind of back a little nostalgically about it, but they have gotten, you know, increasingly better over time. And so
Yeah.
it's, I'd say it's hard to pick just one favorite because they're all so unique and so fun.
They're totally all unique memories for us.
Yeah.
And I see what you mean about the experience being so memorable because what is it the scientists say about the more senses you engage, the stickier it is?
Absolutely. That's so true.
So, what did you serve at your Little Women party?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's more just like the feeling of being there together and hanging out. I think we did a tea that time, though.
Oh yeah, we've done
Yeah.
like a high tea style. What would you call it? Like just a
Scones and tea, and
yeah.
there's been a couple books that's been appropriate for. We did Gatsby pretty recently, and that one we did a lot of appetizers instead of like a meal because the party scene is much, it's like the biggest thing in that book. So we pulled a lot more from like fun party food.
So there's a formula we've kind of followed with some where we do like appetizer, the dinner, and a dessert, and or tea. So with back to Little Women, so we've done like we'll do a cheese or
Charcuterie
a
board.
charcuterie board, which is fun. And then we would take turns cooking. And so for Little Women, I had made a beef stew over some pasta. We had rustic bread and wine, and then we did a dessert platter with macaroons and other cute little cakes. And just honestly, it goes with what it, you know, the a stew for Little Women seemed appropriate. It was very just simple and easy, and delicious. And so that, you know,
Yeah.
that's fun.
I was so excited to see that you'll have a connection through these literary dinner parties with one of our previous What Should I Read Next guests, Andrea Griffith, who owns Browser's Books in, she's in Olympia, right?
She is.
It's too far from me.
But it's only like 30 minutes for us.
Really, it's that close.
Yeah.
That event looked amazing online. Can you tell me a little bit about the Cookbook Club and what you all did for that in-person event?
Yeah, they have a cookbook club quarterly, which they pick a cookbook and have all the members cook something from it and bring it potluck style. And we basically just asked if we could come in and help style the event and add some ambiance. And she said yes, which was really exciting. So we got to go and go early, and we set up the tables with just like a nice eclectic mix of just kind of modern things. We wanted to keep it really in the feel of the bookstore and not clash with what she already has going. It's so beautifully like vintage modern in there. And so we really tried to pull that in and like create some mood in that event. And then Ricky, of course, photographed.
And it was so fun because, you know, we love visiting our local independent bookstores, which we've done exclusively over the past year throughout Seattle, Tacoma, and Olympia. And Browsers just happened to be on that list. And so when we did reach out to Andrea, we basically fangirled over each other. And we, you know, we're like, we love what you do. We, you know, bookstore dream job, right? To run a bookstore. And then she's like, well, I love what you guys do. And so it was such a fun way to bring that part of the community together and meet other people.
Yeah, and we met so many amazing people that night. It was really fun.
And Andrea is just the sweetest.
Yeah,
So
absolutely. Her and
yeah.
Kelly were great.
Yeah.
I love the idea of her cookbook club that cookbooks don't get all the love when it comes to book gatherings, but they're perfect for them because of the food and having people bring their own. That just sounds like It made it sound like she didn't already have an amazing community. A cookbook club would certainly help foster one.
Yeah, yes. It was really, really fun to go to and a really good demonstration that books don't have to be high literature to be enjoyed and have an impact.
That was something that Kelly had said while we were there, and it stood out to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so on target for what we want to do, because we want people to realize, like, even if it's a book you read 20 years ago and you have fond memories of it, you can still bring it out in your life without rereading it if you don't have time. Or maybe it will spark a new interest to reread it again, or a new book. And so when it's like, it doesn't have to be fine literature to bring you together, it was just like, wow, this is exactly right. Because it doesn't, it can be anything in the book world that, you know, that resonates with you, whether it's cooking, whether it's classics, whether it's new contemporary books, it doesn't matter. You know, books, it's all reading, it's all...
They all touch your life.
Yeah, it makes you feel things, and that's what we, yeah, that's what we want to touch on.
Do you have any plans to take the show on the road in the future?
I mean, we hope so. That would be really fun to expand. It's definitely something we've thought about. Ricky is due with baby number 3 here in about a month, so after that, we're going to be gearing up to see what's next.
Yeah.
We'll stay tuned. We'll put photos of all these on the What Should I Read Next Instagram and in our show notes. Tell me about buddy reading.
Buddy reading is probably one of the best additions to our reading lives that we've done. Having somebody else right next to you that had maybe a different experience with a book and to sit and talk about it and bounce you. Often Ricky picks up things that I don't, and vice versa. We pick out different parts of the book that we enjoyed. And it's always a positive, virtuous cycle.
We're really different readers, actually.
Yeah.
Our genres and styles and what we love about books is very unique to one another. And so with her, like, I wanted to read more classic literature. I wanted to kind of circle back to everything that I should have read in, like, you know, grade school to now. I wanted to catch up on, because if I read it, I don't remember. And I wanted to have that experience again. And Michaela thankfully has a brilliant memory when it comes to all the things she's read. And so, you know, she would recommend a classic, and then we would go back and forth and pick one for each month.
Yeah, we trade off who gets to choose.
Yeah. And then we started diving into, you know, not just classics, but newer books or just different kind of books, you know, that were more based on the season or just to whisk you away on a traveling journey just for the fun of it.
We've even done nonfiction.
And so we, you know, there's books that she's read from me or I've read from her that we didn't like as well. And so we can rant and rave about how much we loved or hated the book together. And it's just a fun way to really go full circle with different books and having somebody else to talk to about it.
How is buddy reading different from book club?
Book club, the dynamic is a lot different. You have a lot more people. The conversation usually jumps around a lot more. Mm-hmm. With just us, we can focus our conversation on what we really want to get said. We love book club because then you get a lot more opinions and you get a lot more people with their take on things. But I don't know, buddy reading feels so intimate, and
it is much more
fun
intimate.
And
it's intimate, but it's social. And that's,
yeah,
I think, the best part, because not only do we get to pick what we want to read, which we've done in book clubs too, we've been able to recommend books that everybody's read. But with buddy reading, you know, we get to go full out in our emotions with what made us feel. And so I'm a very passionate person as it is. So I can, you know, get all my frustrations out and she will completely hear me and understand and resonate even if she doesn't agree. And then, you know, of course, from there we tie it into our dinner parties, which is even more, you know, it takes you even further into the book versus book club, where we, you know, kind of get to hang out and chat with a bunch of different people and all their viewpoints. So,
it's different.
It's quite different, but it's equally wonderful.
They fill different spaces for sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite or especially memorable buddy read?
That's a good question.
All of them.
I love Jane Eyre because, again, I had never read it before.
We both had really strong feelings about Wuthering Heights, so still kind of rant and rave about that book.
Yeah. I struggle with what favorite means in the book world, and so I'm sure we'll get to that. But, you know, I've read Michaela's favorite. She loves The Great Gatsby, and so we read that book together, and we threw the dinner party.
Which, having your best friend read your favorite book is a little nerve-wracking.
But, I mean, I was able to appreciate it in a greater context. because I knew she loved it. And I was able to see things in a way that I wouldn't have by myself, because she would pull out these details and I was like, oh, right, that was a really good point to take out. Or she would explain things, you know, from the writer, from writers of the books that I may not have ever thought of. Or
yeah, and there's been books that she liked and I didn't like either. It goes both ways, which is fun to talk to.
Yeah, and because, you know, we are close friends, we can have that
openness, that contrast. Absolutely.
And we don't offend one another.
No.
And like, I don't like that book that you recommended. And it's like,
that's fine.
That's okay.
I can see why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So today we're going to hear both your favorites and not favorites and choose three potential next buddy reads.
Yay.
So excited for that.
Okay. Well, you all know how this works. You tell me three books you love, one book you hate, and what you've been reading lately. And we talk about what you should read next.
Sounds good.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Who wants to start?
So one of my first favorite book is, we'll just go right into The Great Gatsby. We were just talking about that. I love that book. That book just like pulls my heartstrings in all the right places. It's that just heart aching nostalgia. It's Fitzgerald's just brand of magic with his writing. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't write fantasy, but the writing is just so magical in its own way. And I just love sinking into that feeling.
That's fun to hear. I love that book. And Gatsby inspires strong reactions from a lot of people.
Yes.
Love it or hate it.
And most people know the plot. You know, a lot of people had to read it in high school. I think if you only read it in high school, you're doing yourself kind of a disservice, because it is so based on nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And what 16-year-old has a whole lot to be nostalgic about?
I did my very first term paper on the nature of time in The Great Gatsby.
Very cool.
And I don't hate it. So I think that's kind of a miracle.
Yeah. But
made it through. Michaela, what's your second favorite?
My second favorite is A Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Ooh, yes.
Which, again, just so atmospheric. She, even though this is set in our world, she does an amazing job world building. The college, the town, how all of the characters and the settings interact. Her writing, again, is just gorgeous. And again, with that atmosphere, I just love it. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a book I want to wrap myself up into. It veers toward melodramatic sometimes, but in the best way. I just can't eat that book.
So you're okay with melodrama if it earns it?
It has to be beautiful. I can forgive almost anything as long as the writing is really, really strong.
I like it. What's your next favorite?
My final favorite is Tigana by Guy Gabriel Kay.
Uh-huh. Not the book I expected to round out a list like this.
I actually really love fantasy. And this one is interesting because he does historical fantasy, which sounds bonkers. Basically, he researches about time and place and then makes that real setting in real time and twists it into fantasy. He doesn't do a lot of like high fantasy, but his writing, again, super lyrical, super nostalgic book. Basically, the setup for this one is that two wizards have come, and they're the only ones that have magic in the book. The rest of it is fairly, like, realistic. And one of them wins the battle and wipes out a whole generation of people and the name of their country. So nobody, if you're not born there, nobody can hear or say the word Tigana. And so the Tiganese, who have lost their homeland, everybody's memory is gone of them, are struggling to try to reclaim that. And it explores a lot of mythology. It explores a lot of what it means to be from somewhere. It's very character driven. It is a slow burn. It's a big book, and the payoff is huge. And again, Guy Gabriel Kay, his writing is just the most beautiful. It's the kind where you stop the book, you just shut it, and just take a minute to appreciate the sentence you just read. That was the first experience I had with that kind of writing. I was probably a younger, maybe mid-teens when I first picked him up, and it just blew my mind.
I've never read that, but I'm intrigued, especially because I like your other favorites.
Yeah, they all are very similar in tone and atmosphere, I think. Just kind of weird.
Michaela, what's the book you're not so crazy about?
I do not like The Hunger Games.
Tell me why.
That was the book that made me realize I do not like dystopia. That book fell so flat for me. I felt like it was oversimplistic. The more layered plot she was trying to do didn't work for me. I didn't like the characters. The story made me kind of uncomfortable, which is strange because I don't normally shy away from things like that. And I just don't like dystopia. I just don't.
Okay, that's interesting. At first, I thought you might just say that the premise, like the actual games that are the Hunger Games, was just really distasteful and creepy and horrible, and you didn't want to read stuff like that. But that's just one of many factors.
It is.
Okay. I kind of like that that's why you hate it. I mean, I read that book in probably like 4 hours. I'm not trashing it, but I do like that this is a well thought out opinion, not like a knee jerk, I would never read that kind of thing.
No, I read it all the way through, but I put it down and was like, well, I'm done with that.
Sometimes that, I mean,
you know, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Sometimes it just doesn't land. Ricky.
Yes.
How much overlap is there between y'all's reading tastes?
Immense. There's a huge, huge overlap. So that's a good example, actually, is I enjoyed The Hunger Games. Now, I wouldn't say I loved it or anything like that, but I like the concept of the hardship, fighting for what's right, and more or less coming out on top, if that's not inappropriate to say about the book, because, you know, there's so much horrible stuff in it. But I was able to appreciate the dystopia of it because it felt, I don't want to say real, but it wasn't hard to imagine in a real type of setting.
And that's why I don't like dystopia. I don't like the plausibility. It scares me.
Yeah. So I think I'm a little bit more imaginative when it comes to that kind of thing. But that's a good example there for us. It's how different we are in our reading lives, because they're so different. They're so, so different.
Ricky, what's on your favorites list?
So I struggle with this question so much. I can't honestly say that I have a favorite per se, but I do have a list of books that I can say that I really love. And so my first choice is Unbroken by Lauren Hill and Brand. And I think I had seen the movie actually before I read the book, but it had been probably years in between, and I didn't correlate the two at the time. I didn't realize that it was about Louise Zamperini, who's this incredible Olympian with this rough history and this incredible, you know, story. So if you don't know about him, you're doing yourself a disservice, and you need to go look him up and read his story, because it's incredible. And so I don't honestly even remember I came across the book because I love historical fiction. I love the World War II setting. I just like to learn. I like to learn about it. And I don't feel like I had enough history in school. So the more I can learn and enjoy from a book, the better. And so reading about Louise Zamperini for me was just incredible, because I resonate with him on a very light scale. I can't say I've been through anything comparable to him. But Lauren Hillenbrand writes a story about him and his rough childhood and how that translated into him being a track superstar and an Olympian, and what it was like growing up in his time before World War II, and basically rising from the ashes in his story. And then he, you know, is whisked away, and it's just the things he's able to endure and overcome just by pure grit and spirit was so captivating, so encouraging and motivating to me that I love it so much. I barely have words to really even explain it, but I just, it's in her research. Oh my gosh. So that is a huge tie for me, is the writer and the story. And so if you know anything about Lauren Hillenbrand, you know, she suffers from a chronic fatigue syndrome, which she knows she gets a lot of slack for. It's like, how is this really an issue? But it's no joke been a lifelong struggle for her. Well, not lifelong, but a long-term struggle from her like school days. And so her ability to research that book, to like, I literally felt like I was flying on a B-24. Like I, you know, I knew what it felt like to be, you know, tucked up under the gun where Louis was, to be in the cockpit flying, to be stuck on a raft in the Pacific Ocean for over a month, and to be given that, like, I have such a vivid imagination to be given that kind of detail from a woman who can't even hardly leave her home. I mean, my hat is off to her. That's incredible. And so I loved, one of the things I learned about her, I loved, was that Bill Darin was an aviation enthusiast, and she was able to talk him into coming to her house even before they had met, and brought literal World War II combat equipment for her to learn exactly how it works. I think there was an article where she jokingly said she spent an hour bombing Chicago. You know, she had it at a map, and had a map taped up, and learned how to use these weapons that Louis Zamperini would have really used. And it just ties the whole story in so completely that I love it. I love it so much.
I love her. She's written an amazing piece about her chronic fatigue syndrome that really did make me realize, oh, this isn't the thing that a couple of my friends used to complain about so they didn't have to stand up in choir in high school. This is a debilitating, life-changing illness. And she writes about the sudden onset, and it's really fascinating. Also, I was so excited to see a couple of years ago that she has another book in the works now, but that means we won't be reading it until like 2025 or something like that. But I'm still really glad to know that it is in progress.
Yes. And I'm thankfully quite patient. I'm not rushing to get to her book, because as soon as I do, then I read it and it's over and I have to wait till I'm, you know, a grandmother to read it. But
that's a good way to look at it.
I actually had read where she had found the story of Seabiscuit in old newspapers that she orders off eBay. And that's how she found out about Seabiscuit and how nobody had wanted that story, because like, how do you write a book about a racehorse in a way that anybody would be interested in? And, you know, the right person got to it and was like, you need to read this and we're going to publish it. And then that's exactly what happened with Unbroken. On the back, I believe it was on the back of a newspaper about Seabiscuit, where she read about Zamperini. And from there, she was captivated and researched. And 10 years later, that book was born. And, you know, I'm so curious to learn about this next book she has and where the inspiration came from, because, you know, people just don't do things like that anymore. And I absolutely love that part about her stories.
Ricky, what's another favorite?
So quite a stark contrast would be The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society by Marianne Schaefer. So I had actually read an epistolary formatted book before. And I had just seen this book through another friend who's also a photographer on Instagram. And I was curious about the title. She said she loved it. And so I picked it up. And I was wary at first because, again, that format was so new to me. And then I dove into it and I just loved it, because Marianne Schaefer was able to bring to life these characters and their homes and their stories through a series of letters written back and forth between the characters. And she did such a brilliant job at giving them all distinct personalities and just really building who they are, which is a very important factor in books, is having unique voices and characters, unique personalities, and being true to who they are if they were real people versus written like it, you know, in a book. So I love the story, and I love, again, where, you know, the characters on the island go through this struggle, and they come up with this great tie-in to books, and who doesn't love, you know, a book about books? And you know, they overcome it, and then the original writer was able to go to the island. And it's just such a warm story, despite some hardships that come out that you can't help but love.
Ricky, what's your final favorite?
So this was a really big struggle for me. I think originally I had chosen The Secret Garden, because who doesn't love The Secret Garden? It's so much fun. But I didn't feel like I was doing a service to my taste in books. And so we actually did a book club recently where I had recommended The Grave Book by Neil Gaiman. And I had read this book years ago and decided to reread it, which was, it's the second book I've ever reread ever. And I loved it all over again. And so as much of a stark contrast as that is in my taste of books, because I'm not typically a moody or dark book reader, I am very much in love with Gaiman's writing. And
yeah, this shocked me when she said she loved that. I was like, what?
So it's because it starts in a real world setting again, and that's how Gaiman is able to create these incredible stories. And so it actually started, I read The American Gods like 9+ years ago on a whim at work. I pulled it off the shelf, intrigued by the title, and I was like, this is a really good book. It's on my shelf ever since. And then I had a friend who was difficult to recommend books to, and I was like, well, maybe try this one. And I gave it to him. He read it, loved it, and then he read all of Gaiman's other books, and he recommended The Graveyard Book to me. And at first I was like, I don't know if I can do this book. That my imagination is too vivid. It's too dark. I'm going to have literal nightmares from it. But as I went on in the book, it was such a creative, unique idea that I was completely entranced with just the imagination it takes to write something like that, but also keep a real setting in it, which is, again, another thing that I very much love. If you're going to write about anything sort of fantasy or magical realism, I like the real world setting in it. And then, you know, Gaiman has a great story for his inspiration for that book, too, based on the Jungle Book and the story of his toddler riding a tricycle and riding through the graveyard across the street from where he lived. And it's an incredible way to like formulate a story, and just to be, again, so creative, so imaginative, and so real all at the same time.
Ricky, what's the book that wasn't for you?
Another tough question. So I've only ever put down one book. I love to finish books. I will power through them if I don't like them, because I feel that I learned something either way. But one book in particular rubbed me the wrong way, which was Julie and Julia by Julie Powell. And I loved the movie. I think the movie is so fun. It's one that I would watch over and over again. So I was so excited to read her book. I was so excited to dive in and learn more about her story, you know, on what I felt would probably be a slightly more intimate level. But as I started, it was too intimate, where she shared details that I just feel were better left in her own mind. Like the things you do as a child that maybe you're a little ashamed of, you don't need to share about, they don't need to be put in a book. And by the time she crossed a boundary with talking about, you know, her dad and herself and things like that, I was just like, you know, I just don't think I want to read anymore. And her character was very dislikable. There was nothing to really resonate with or to connect with. And I partly wish that if I had finished, that I would have maybe felt differently with her, as, because she starts as like a child or very young, and she grows into, you know, how she became the blogger and the cook and the connection with Julia Child. But I just couldn't get past the early years and the way that she had written it all. I couldn't, I just couldn't do it.
That's funny. I did not remember all those details, because I read it forever ago. And I had been really, really excited about it because I'd read an excerpt in Bon Appetit magazine that was really, really funny. And I know it involved butter and making a pilgrimage to the Smithsonian when the Julia Child exhibit was there with her pound of butter, because she thought that would be a fitting tribute. And that's still, like, that's a great piece. And it's the best part of the book. So maybe Bon Appetit has it online.
Well, and that's what I was thinking, like, you know, if I had read more, I probably would have enjoyed the second half. But I was so dissuaded from the first half that I couldn't keep going. Or I didn't want to. I was so annoyed that I was like, there's other things I could be reading that make me not feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah. You talked earlier about how reading can be so intimate. And sometimes it feels like an author. I mean, it's a nonfiction memoir. Like, sometimes it feels like the author is sharing details that are so intimate that you shouldn't really be reading them. And that's maybe a very tactful way of describing how I felt about that one.
Yeah. And typically that's something I would love, you know, like the letter form of writing with in Guernsey, you know, that's a pretty intimate portrayal. I think reading more or less someone else's letters, even if it's up, is fun. And I like those details, but it was completely different in Julia Powell's book. And so, yeah, it wasn't the same for me.
I hear you. That's a lot to go on, but also a whole lot of conflicting information. Do you have, when you think about the characteristics you're looking for in a buddy read, how would you sum that up?
Good writing is paramount for us. Like, we're buddy reading right now, East of Eden, and we both agree we would read John Steinbeck's.
Scratching that off my list.
Grocery list. We love, he's so immersive. His characters are so real. And those are really important. Both of us, character-driven, I feel like, is
characters
a big tenet.
Characters are very, very important to me. So there's a couple other books that I could absolutely rage about that were maybe good plots or stories. But if the characters aren't solid and have unique voices, that is going to be an instant, like, big red fat X book for me. I cannot read books that don't have well-written characters in them.
Yeah.
Good writing.
The other thing is
characters are very important.
Really solid, like time and place and setting, because we do use as literary dinner party fodder, and those tend to need something that you can pull from. A lot of, you know, some contemporary novels just don't quite have the same impactful setting as it kind of depends, obviously, but. That's another big factor for us that we consider.
And not that it has to be blatantly obvious either. We don't really need, you know, the food they ate spelled out for
right.
us. It is helpful, but it's not a requirement, because we can get really creative with any other element that is in the book that's, you know, well written.
Okay. I can work with that. This will be fun.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Michaela and Ricky. Okay, I have a long, crazy list. Are you ready to dive in?
Yes. Give it to us.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. There's solid through lines in both your books, and there's lots of overlap. And obviously, you said that you can learn something from finishing a book, whether or not it's like the book that speaks to your heart. So I feel like that gives me a lot of freedom to screw up. We're gonna find you books you love.
We're okay with books that we don't like, though, too. Like, even if, like, Wuthering Heights for me, as wonderfully written as that book is, it really,
oh, that last half, just ugh.
Yeah, I didn't.
I'm so glad I read that, and I never want to read it again.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes,
I don't understand it as anybody's favorite per se. No offense, but it makes me frustrated and very conflicted.
But it sticks with you.
But it is beautifully written, and it's very atmospheric.
It's not a forgettable book.
Yeah. So there's credit where credit's due there.
Okay. So I'm really taking to heart place and setting, atmosphere, good characters, good writing. Those are our four big...
Yes.
Matt, can you have four cornerstones? Yeah, yeah. Those are our four big traits that we want to satisfy. How do you... I feel like you've done a Pride and Prejudice dinner party, but have you all read Persuasion?
I haven't read Persuasion. That is the only Jane Austen novel I have not read.
It's such a good book for fall. I think it would make an amazing dinner party. You've got the great atmosphere. You probably have the stuff on that top shelf of your pantry cabinet, wherever you keep your literary dinner party stuff, Michaela, because you've done a Pride and Prejudice party, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It came out beautifully.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you know about Persuasion?
I've seen the movie.
And I know nothing.
Okay, so people are going to be grabbing their Rotten Tomatoes to throw, but I don't think there's a like amazing, charming, yes, I totally see the characters as I pictured them in my head or remotely close adaptation of Persuasion. So, and the ending of the most recent one I saw like truly has one of the worst on-screen kisses in the history of film. It's just, it's so bad. The novel's so good and it's great for fall because it feels a little bit darker than Austen's previous works. Not like the Graveyard Book darker, but like Emma and Pride and Prejudice are so like smart and snappy, yeah, and bright. Bouncy. Yes, they're bouncy. This is not bouncy because the heroine is an old lady who's like 28 or something, insanely old like I'm that. Old. Yeah.
That sounds right up my alley though.
Yeah. So it's about a woman who basically broke up with her boyfriend and then regretted it for a really, really long time and has a chance for a do-over. And so it's just so good. It's perfect for fall. Can I stop there?
Yes. I will absolutely.
It would be
read
so
that.
Fun to read together.
I actually don't read too much about books beforehand because I've learned quickly that expectations in books will ruin it for you. I don't like that to happen. So yes, that's a good place to end.
Okay, we'll stop it right there.
Perfect.
For book two, what do you know about Zora Neale Hurston? I'm thinking about Their Eyes Were Watching God.
I've heard the title, but I know nothing. Yeah, same here.
Okay. Here's what you need to know. A lot of people start it and they think, oh my gosh, I can't read this. It's so inaccessible because it's written in dialogue and it takes a little bit to catch the rhythm of it. Do either of you ever do audiobooks?
Yes. I listen to audiobooks when I go on my run every day. And that's like what motivates me to get out the door.
This would be an amazing audiobook because you don't have to struggle with figuring out how to pronounce the dialogue that you're reading on the page. It won an Audi award. You can get it. Ooh, I'm not going to recommend getting an unabridged book because sacrilege. But
yes,
the abridged is less than 3 hours and the unabridged is only just about 7. And it's an Audi award winner. It's really like, this is a great one to do on audiobook. And you won't have that same problem of feeling like, whoa, I'm not sure I can figure out how to get the hang of this if you do it on audio. But if you do persevere for the first 20, 25 pages, I think you'll get it. And when I say dialogue, I'm, did I say dialogue? Dialect?
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Lots of us had to read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer in school, where, do you know how he writes some of the characters' words, like the way they sound and not, right? So that's what I'm talking about, but you'll get the hang of it. So this is very atmospheric, set in the deep south in the Florida Everglades. It was written in—
Ooh, I love it.
Okay, is that a good start?
Mm-hmm.
It's set in, I think, the 20s.
My favorite. I think Kella loves that time setting too.
Not quite Gatsby here. Yeah, but good. I'm glad you like that era. Okay, so based on what you said about expectations, I'm keeping the plot spare. This is the story of a young woman and her three husbands, one of which is her true love, one of which she is accused of murdering. And I just said the word murder, but at its heart, this is a love story. And it's a kind of book that I think a lot of readers have said they have a hard time understanding, like the description doesn't grab them, but then they start reading it and are like, oh, this, like, I didn't know it would be like this. And the writing is unique and really good. And also, I want to be careful using this word, but it's a really important work of American literature. And I know that it's you, Michaela, right? That's obsessed with the classics.
Yes.
So I think you would feel your life was richer if you could like put this on your I read it shelf.
Definitely sold. That's an important factor. And yeah, then just the way you described, like, you know, that I didn't know it was like this, and
yes,
surprising rating. Like that's exactly up my alley. So I think you've nailed both of our requirements in books. I'm excited to read that one.
Okay. Fantastic. How do you feel about cookbooks?
Well, you love cookbooks. They're super fun. We've been reading ones that are based on books, like Voracious by Cara Nicoletti.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was super fun.
I'm wondering, this might be too much of a stretch, but I'm wondering about My Kitchen Year by Ruth Reichel. Have you read it, encountered it? Do you know anything about this?
I know who Ruth Reynolds is, but I don't know about that book.
Okay. Here's why I like this for you. It is a cookbook. It's 136 recipes that she said saved her life. Like, this was written the year after Gourmet magazine very unexpectedly folded in 2009. And all of a sudden, she didn't know what she was going to do when she woke up in the morning. So she kind of cooked her way through, like going back to cooking for fun, for herself, for her family, for friends, because she wanted to, not because she had to in any sense. So what I like about this is that every single recipe is introduced by a personal essay. There is a huge amount of non-recipe text or non-directions text in the book. And she talks about wandering through Chinatown and getting unfamiliar dumplings and taking the subway all the way up to the last stop in Queens to go to this one little tiny restaurant that everybody who loved good Korean food knew was the only place you could possibly go to find, you know, whatever kind of dish. And then she and her husband spend a lot of time upstate. So they're going to the farmer's market, and they're going to the small shops, and they're getting, you know, produce off their friends' farms. And you could do a lot with the upstate New York theme. You could do a whole lot with the New York City theme, because that's where she lives. And so much of her essays are about just her wandering around New York City, or maybe not wandering, but on a mission in New York City, like hunting down specific ingredients. And obviously you could cook from the book, but you wouldn't have to. You could get takeout pot stickers and whatever else. I mean,
that's what we tell other people too.
Yeah. You're the one who makes it look beautiful. So I will let you choose the menu for this thing. But I think there's a lot you could do with it. And her reflections on how writing helped her get through and how food helped her get through, I think there's so much there to talk about, because it's about food, but it's also about navigating life's major transitions. And even if you're—
And that's huge.
Yes.
That's what I think makes a good cookbook, is having, you know, some of your own experiences and story in there. So it really connects you to the book. And even though it's a cookbook, you can still be connected to it in that way, whether it's through beautiful photos or the, you know, the story of who you are or whatever. I think that's a really good element for a good cookbook.
I'm glad to hear it. And also, I think she has a son. He's either going off to college or leaving college and finding a job, but there's another generation navigating a transition here. And there's so much to talk about just coping with change in life.
Story of our lives in the last few years. We've both gone through a lot of change.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years. Yeah. So that would really resonate with both of us, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Of those three books, what do you think might be your next buddy read?
We'll have to talk about it. Probably Their Eyes Are Watching God.
Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting, although I am intrigued by Persuasion, and I would love to add that to my list anyway.
Definitely going to read Persuasion at some point. Absolutely. And yeah. My Kitchenaire is definitely going to read all three.
between the two of us, we're able to knock out a whole bunch of books, whether we read them together, which in this case, obviously we will, or if, you know, just one of us does and the other person can't, then it's a good way to balance the amount of reading we try to always squeeze in into our short days.
Well, I hope you enjoy them. And if any events that lead to photos of a literary nature emerge out of these three picks, I got to see them.
Trust. Oh, you will.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We actually left our next buddy read, maybe not the next one, but the one after the next, pretty open so that we could throw in a dinner party and read, add this to our TBR.
Yeah. The next one's actually Brett Said Revisited.
Yeah, we encourage our book club to read it too. So
yeah, it's pretty great.
I love that book and I've read it multiple times, so I can't wait to see what you do with that.
Be surprised that I love that.
Y'all, this was really fun. Thanks so much for talking books today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey readers, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ricky and Michaela today. Head to the podcast site to share your recommendations for their buddy reads and to let them know there what you thought of my recommendations. That page is at whatshouldireadnextpodcast.com/98, and it's also where you'll find the full list of titles we talked about today. See more of Ricky and Michaela's literary lifestyle at their blog, theardentbiblio.com, and follow them on Instagram at theardentbiblio. It's one of my favorites. Readers, if you enjoyed this podcast, I would appreciate it so much if you could rate it or even better, review it on iTunes. I do not understand how the Apple algorithms work, but I do know that your ratings and especially your reviews are big factors when it comes to helping What Should I Read Next move up those iTunes charts. And that makes it so much easier for book lovers to find our show. Thanks in advance for taking 2 minutes to show your support this way. Thanks again to Virtue Labs for sponsoring today's episode. Virtue Labs is a hair care brand with a vision to give everyone their best hair with the help of an incredible new protein called alpha keratin 60KU. This is a whole human protein that's identical to the keratin in your own hair. As a result, it can fill in cracks from damage to change your hair's quality and appearance forever. Try alpha keratin 60KU exclusively in Virtue Labs shampoos, conditioners, and styling products. Just visit virtuelabs.com and use the code READNEXT to try Virtue at 10% off and get free shipping. If you're on Twitter, let me know there, at Ann Bogle. That is Ann with an E, B as in books, O-G-E-L. Tag us on Instagram to share what you are reading. You can find me there at Ann Bogle and at What Should I Read Next. Readers, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. And as Rainer Maria Rilke said, ah, how good it is to be among people who are reading. Happy reading, everyone.